Olá, esse é o Poder Entrevista e eu sou Paulo Silva Pinto, editor sênior do Poder 360. Vou entrevistar o ministro do Trabalho e Economia da Áustria, Martin Kocher. Martin Kocher tem 50 anos, nasceu em Salzburg, tem graduação e doutorado em economia. Foi diretor do Instituto de Estudos Avançados em Viena. É ministro desde 2021. Em visita ao Brasil nesta segunda-feira, 15 de abril de 2024, em Brasília, reuniu-se com os ministros da Previdência, Carlos Luppi, e do Desenvolvimento, o vice-presidente Geraldo Alckmin. Professor Dr. Martin Kocher, thank you very much for this interview.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Agradeço também a todos os web espectadores que assistem a este programa. Esta entrevista está sendo gravada no estúdio do Poder 360 em Brasília, em 15 de abril de 2024. Para ficar sempre bem informado, inscreva-se no canal do Poder 360, ative as notificações e não perca nenhuma informação relevante. A entrevista, a partir de agora, será em inglês. Mr. Kocher, what are the main challenges regarding economy and labor today?
Well, there are lots of challenges at the moment, I guess. I mean, there's always challenges, of course, and they change over time. But when we come to the economy, it's, of course, for a small, relatively small country like Austria, we see a certain fragmentation of world trade that makes it more difficult, of course, to succeed in exports. We've seen developments in prices, especially in energy prices, that makes it more difficult to remain competitive. We have seen, of course, developments in terms of world order, in terms of conflicts that makes it more difficult to work together. So there's lots of challenges that companies are facing. And particularly in Europe, we also see, of course, a scarcity of labor given the aging of the population. So the workforce shrinks or doesn't grow as quickly as the last decades. And so that creates an additional problem and challenge for companies to attract new groups of workers, to have the right incentives that people start working. And it's, of course, also a challenge not only for companies. It's a challenge for the political sphere, making sure that we have all the conditions in place that respond to these challenges correctly, which is not easy because many of these challenges arose very shortly after the first month of the pandemic. You remember perhaps the supply chain problems. You remember, of course, some of the other issues. Mm-hmm. And I think the world has developed in a very quick way that made it more difficult to respond, and all the countries are struggling to find the right responses.
In what way those challenges are similar in Brazil and Austria, being two very different countries?
That's a good point. I think there is quite a lot of similarities. When we talk about fragmentation of world trade, when we talk about energy prices, energy supply, I think the entire world is more or less in the same boat. There's, of course, differences between the countries in terms of the priorities in the industries, the specific specializations. There's quite a lot of differences between the Brazil and Austria. Brazil is much larger than Austria, but there's also commonalities when it comes to the necessity of skilling as many workers as possible, making sure that education and reskilling and upskilling initiatives for adults are at the best pace that we can achieve, because that's something that will be, I think, a joint challenge for all countries. The technologies change quickly, the world changes quickly, so we have to make sure that workers, people are up to speed with these developments, and all countries are trying to find the best ways to educate as many people as possible, to keep people in the workforce, to make sure that they are up to speed with the technological developments that they are facing in offices and in production.
What will be the impact of artificial intelligence in years to come, or even in decades to come, if it's possible to forecast?
It's very difficult to forecast. If we knew that, of course, life would be much easier. And we have seen a lot of forecasts over the last decades for technological developments that were often wrong in hindsight when you look back. So I think Artificial intelligence will change the way we work. It will change the workplace. It will change the skills that we need. It will change the speed of work, perhaps. But it will also offer enormous opportunities to make the workplace better, to focus on those things where humans are much better than processes, automation, and that's creativity, that's emotional intelligence, that's teamwork. All these things will become more important. I think the discussion that we have at the moment is sometimes occupied by too much fear. Yes, indeed, some of the tasks that we'll do every day will be taken over by artificial intelligence or some automated processes. But on the other hand, that frees up time for those tasks that we usually like more and that usually also guarantee higher incomes. The difficult thing is, of course, making sure that everybody can follow this transition in a way that we don't lose too many jobs and that the jobs that are created, the new jobs that are created, that these jobs can be filled with people that otherwise lose their jobs because they are replaced by artificial intelligence. And on top of that, I think when we go beyond the workplace in terms of research, in terms of tackling the large problems that the world has, artificial intelligence provides unique opportunities. On the other hand, we have to make sure that there is regulation in place that protects people and that makes sure that the technology is used in the best interest of mankind. And the European Union has passed very quickly an Artificial Intelligence Act that tries to regulate artificial intelligence in a way that makes sure that this is fulfilled, but on the other hand, should not harm technological advance.
Now, what will be the result of this visit to Brazil?
I hope that the Brazilian-Austrian relationship that lasts for around 200 years now, 200 years of diplomatic relationship, that we are able to deepen this relationship, especially when it comes to economic ties, especially when it comes to people-to-people exchange. There is a lot of institutions in place that we can build on, but we have to revive them. We have to make sure that we work together more closely. I think it's about time to do that. As I said, the resources that we can build on are very good. There's about 150 companies in Austria that are having offices in Brazil. Many of them produce in Brazil. There's enormous opportunities to expand that. But there's quite a lot of companies also, Brazilian companies being active in Austria. We want to make sure that we exchange ideas, both when it comes to technology, but also when it comes to skilling initiatives for the workforce. We have signed a memorandum of understanding just an hour ago, where we deepen our economic relationship. We have signed a letter of intent to work together more closely when it comes to the development of skills in the workforce. So all these things, I think, are a sign that Austria has a lot of interest in working more closely together with Brazil. And I was welcomed very warmly and generously here. And I'm very thankful for that because it shows that also Brazil is interested in deepening the relationship with Austria.
Now, you just relaunched an initiative, partnership, which was first launched in 1987. Is that right?
That's right. We have an institution that's called the Joint Economic Committee, where there should be regular meetings where countries talk about projects, government to government, but also, of course, bring businesses together, companies together, to make sure that there is information, there is foreign direct investment, there is technological cooperation. As you said, this committee hasn't met for almost 40 years, which I think is a shame. So this was a deliberate choice to come here and reinstall the committee. We have talked about that with the vice president, and there will be a formal meeting next year in Vienna. I'm looking very much forward to this meeting. It should give us a leverage for actually leveraging projects together, working more closely together, and deepening the economic relationship. It's only a comedy, of course, only, but it's an important signal also of the commitment of both sides to work more closely together.
Well, if I'm not wrong, yeah. The last minister in your position that came here was, 64 years ago? Is that right?
Yes, actually, we did some research. Actually, when we decided to plan this visit, I didn't even know that. There were a couple of visits, bilateral visits, over the last 10 to 15 years by the Austrian president, of course, the Austrian chancellor and the Brazilian president, and the Austrian president and Brazilian president, they met at international meetings. But you're right, I think intensifying also bilateral visits is an important aspect, and especially when it comes to the Ministry of Labour and Economy, it was about time to be here. I also invited my colleagues from Brazil to come to Vienna. I'm hopeful that we'll have a meeting soon in Vienna and intensify the relationship, because waiting for 60 years is not an option anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, many Brazilian economists are very fond of the ideas of Austrian classical economists, Friedrich Hayek and Ludwig von Mises. There is even a Mises Institute in Brazil. So what do you think of this admiration, let's say so?
Oh, that's a very important point, of course. So Austria has a lot of famous economists from that period. They provided very thought-provoking ideas. Nowadays, of course, we know that many of these ideas were right. Some of these ideas were not right. As always, you learn over time. And many of them had a very strong philosophical approach to solve economic problems. Since I was an economist before I joined politics, I know nowadays that economics has become much more empirical. And I try to base the decisions that I take as a politician on empirical facts, on the evidence. And that makes it sometimes a bit more difficult, because ideas that are too one-sided, they don't survive anymore, because you have to take the intricacies and the diversity of reality into account. But of course, the names you mentioned, they were very influential economists. And some of our ideas nowadays build on their work, and it's good to know that they are still also known in Brazil, far away from their home, actually.
Well, they are very present in the debate, because, you know, there's a debate on whether the state should sponsor development or not, and of course those economists they think citizens and workers and entrepreneurs should hold it. Can you talk a little bit about this debate of what you think of in today's global situation it could be placed?
So there is a very active debate in economics nowadays, in scholarly economics. What is the role of the public sector? What is the role of the private sector? This has been always the case. And we know, of course, that a strong private sector is very important for prosperity, because property rights help a lot to solve economic problems. And many economic problems are problems of cooperation, and cooperation is much easier if you have clear property rights. If you don't have property rights, it's much more complicated. On the other hand, and that's something we know also for a long time, but now some newer results by famous economists have reaffirmed this idea, is that there has to be a public sector that guarantees these property rights. There has to be a public sector that invests strategically. The balance between public and private investments have to be there. Infrastructure is a very important aspect. Some of the infrastructure can be provided privately, but some of it cannot be provided privately. So there is a role for a public sector and public investments, and a strong role for good politics. I tend to think of it as complementarities. And there is an American economist, Darren Acemoglu, who wrote a book called The Narrow Corridor, I think is the title of the book. And he tells us, and I think that's a very interesting insight, there has to be this balance between private investments, private initiatives, strong institutions that guarantee property, but also these public investments that go hand in hand, always in a democratic society, making sure that there's no corruption. Corruption is the worst in development. So the picture that is painted nowadays in modern empirical economics is a much more diverse one. And of course, that makes it more difficult to find the right policies in politics. But I think it's worthwhile doing it. And I try to follow this evidence when I design policies in Austria.
Is there anything that wasn't asked here and you would like to point out?
No, I just want to point out that it's a real pleasure to be here in Brazil and to learn a lot. I mean, the two countries are quite far from each other geographically. On the other hand, when we look at history, when we look at culture, there is some commonalities that many people probably don't even know, actually. In the 19th century, beginning of 19th century, Austria was one of the first countries of the European Union to recognize Brazil and to have diplomatic relations, formal diplomatic relations. There is, of course, the imperial heritage that binds us together. And so I think there's lots of reasons, not only coming from the nowadays perspective of economic ties to work together more closely, but also historical reasons. And I'm looking forward to, as I said, deepen this relationship between Austria and Brazil.
E chega ao final essa edição do Poder Entrevista. Mr. Kocher, thank you very much for this interview.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Agradeço também a todos os web espectadores que assistiram este programa. Esta entrevista foi gravada no estúdio do Poder 360 em Brasília, em 15 de abril de 2024. Para ficar sempre bem informado, inscreva-se no canal do Poder 360, ative as notificações e não perca nenhuma informação relevante. Muito obrigado e até a próxima.
Poder Monitor. Acesse agora e ganhe 30 dias grátis.